With AEW Dynasty this Sunday, tonight, much more focused show than last week. Focused on all the right things and not the wrong things. We had Swerve Strickland, Samoa Joe, we had dueling promos from both men all throughout the show, building to the very end of the show. Swerve coming out, calling out Joe, and the final shot that we got here on this go-home show tonight, this final Dynamite, still have Collision this weekend. Samoa Joe, the AEW World Champion, standing tall over the challenger. And that's the scene right there that I was looking for. That's the scene that I was expecting, because on Sunday, if we're going to get a passing of the torch, we're going to get a new champion crowned, that is the final shot that you would expect to see. You would expect to see the challenger laid out, comes back on Sunday, gets his revenge, stands tall. Pretty, you know, wrestling 101 type stuff. But I liked it. I like what they did with those two. I also like that main event that we got between Will Ospreay and Claudio Castagnoli. The first time that these two men have ever set foot in the ring together one-on-one. And they had a very good match on the show tonight. Ospreay has been mowing him down. Every week they put him out there with somebody different. It was Kyle Fletcher one week. It was Takeshita back at Revolution. Every week it's somebody different. Here's a match we've never seen before. Him against a member of the Blackpool Combat Club, the same faction that Bryan Danielson is part of. The same Bryan Danielson that he is going into combat with for the very first time at Dynasty this Sunday. Ospreay picks up yet another win. Builds even more momentum. No Danielson on the show tonight. We'll see him on Collision this weekend. But that was the show stealer of the night between those two, which honestly, you know, if you looked at the lineup coming into tonight, you knew exactly what this match was going to be. You knew this match was going to blow people away because Ospreay goes out there and it doesn't matter who they put him in the ring with. He goes out there and consistently steals the show and probably will again on Sunday. But Tony Khan, you know, he doubled down this week on his decision to air that brawl in footage from last week. So doubling down on being wrong is basically what he was doing. He's doubly wrong, but they needed a show like this, you know, tonight, I felt, going into this pay-per-view. And thankfully, that's where the focus was kept. It was kept on Dynasty. Not only did they focus on Dynasty and setting up to and building the key matches for that show, but they also set up the main event already for next week's Dynamite, which is coming up at Daly's Place. They're going back home. And Jon Moxley with his brand new IWGP title, he was there tonight too. He's in the main event of next week's show, which we will talk about. There was a little bit of breaking news when the show went off the air tonight in the building in Indianapolis. Congratulations are in order for two AEW stars, Ruby Soho and Angelo Parker. Ruby Soho announced that she is pregnant. And at least according to Sean Ross Sapp, this is legit. This is not part of a storyline. They've been doing a storyline romance on TV. You know, I'll be honest with you, I actually wasn't sure if the two of them were an item in real life or it was just a storyline thing. Evidently, I guess it's a real thing, and she is pregnant. So we will not be seeing Ruby Soho in the ring for a while, but congratulations to the two of them. That is very cool. This is your AEW Dynamite review for April 17th, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. And as I say that date out loud, could be wrong, but I'm almost positive. It was April 17th, 24 years ago, when Chris Jericho in State College, Pennsylvania, pinned Triple H to win the WWE Championship. And for at least one commercial break, Chris Jericho was the champion until it got reversed by the referee's decision. One of the all-time great segments in Raw history. So much so that I remember that it took place in State College, Pennsylvania. And I'm reminded of that, not only because of the date, but here we are now, 24 years later, and as great as that segment was, I had to watch Chris Jericho out there tonight, and the entire time I was watching Jericho, all I could think is, can we get a break from this man? He's the last person right now that I want to see on TV. Back then, it's night and day. He was the most popular person in the building. Everybody went wild when he won the title that night. 24 years later, he's overstayed his welcome. He needs to go away for a while. Tonight's episode opened with Jon Moxley, the brand new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion making his way through the crowd. Now, Moxley, for those who don't know, last Friday, New Japan held its Windy City Riot show in Chicago with the main event of Jon Moxley against Tetsuya Naito for the IWGP title. And Moxley walked out the first man in history to be WWE champion, AEW champion, and IWGP champion. So that is that's his place in history now. He becomes the first man to attain such a goal. Maybe not the last, but he is the first. And he is set to defend that title against Ren Narita. He's going to be in Japan wrestling Dontaku coming up on May 4th. He'll be defending the title there. New Japan has announced that the winner of that match between Moxley and Narita, which is going to be Moxley, is going to defend the championship at Resurgence, which is happening in this country. It's in Ontario, California on May 11th. And it will be, again, Moxley defending the IWGP title on that show against Shota Umino. And I was a little surprised when I heard that announcement because I was expecting, and still expecting, that Moxley will hold on to the title until Forbidden Door, at least. And I had pitched Umino as an opponent for him to drop the belt to on that show. Now they're doing the match on May 11th, which is coming up pretty quick. It's less than a month away. I suppose it's always possible they could switch the title on that show. I would be shocked, though, if they took that belt off Moxley before, at least before Forbidden Door. So that was the only thing that surprised me. Not so much that he's wrestling Umino, but just when they're actually going to be doing the match. When Moxley got into the ring, he said one of the first titles that he ever won was at the Salvation Army here in Indiana 20 years ago. Always swimming upstream, many people told him what he could and could not do, but his reaction to those is the same back then as it is today. Kiss my ass. That was his response. That's a very Jon Moxley response. He says, being great is not about what other people say. It's about what's in your heart. Moxley said that he chased the title for 5 years. And it's interesting, you know, he, for as long as he's been in AEW, he has been going back and forth, working for New Japan. So he's actually more than any other, you know, ex-WWE star. We've seen Jericho have matches in Japan. Really, more than any other that I can think of, Moxley has pretty consistently been, you know, going back and forth, carrying the AEW flag, but also the New Japan flag. And it hadn't really registered that it's been 5 years, but he said he's been chasing the title for 5 years. 5 years ago, people said that him holding that title, let alone holding it here on Dynamite, was impossible. He said that it was not impossible if they had known what was inside of him. He said it's about how deep you can dig and how far you are willing to go to prove all the doubters wrong. And he said that that's what AEW is all about. He brought up the Don Callis family. And he called Callis a creep. Talked about them putting out a hit on Bryan Danielson. And said if they're going to put a target on Bryan's back, then you're basically putting a target on my back. He said that they can come and find him. He'll be here all night. He said, you know, I could go bash them in the head with a tire iron. I could go out in the parking lot, try to run them over. But they wouldn't learn anything. So he wants the biggest and the baddest that the Callis family has to offer. And so he specifically called out Powerhouse Hobbs. And he challenged him to a match in the main event next week in Jacksonville. Hobbs will accept, he said, but he'll learn just how out of depth he is. And he will drag Hobbs to the deepest waters, and he will not see a shoreline. Hobbs will know the difference between Moxley and himself and realize that Callis has been feeding him lies. Hobbs will realize there will only ever be one, Jon Moxley. So they have a pay-per-view coming up on Sunday. Moxley is not on the show. Hobbs is not on the show, but they have already set up the main event for next Wednesday's Dynamite, which is not a bad thing. Just pointing it out, I mean, setting up your main event a week in advance is never a bad thing. But again, we'll see what happens with the IWGP title. I would still be surprised if Moxley does not walk into the UBS Arena in June with that title. But I would also be surprised if he doesn't drop it around that time. I don't see him as being a long-term champion. I think it's something that New Japan and Ghetto probably did to try to goose things a little bit again, Moxley is, he's carrying the flag of both companies. You know, he's a big New Japan guy. So he'll go back and forth. He'll defend the title. And Tony Khan will let him do that. And New Japan right now, honestly, could use something like that. They could use visibility for their championship on television here. They could use having a name like Jon Moxley in that position, even if only for a few months, to have some big matches and sell tickets if they're going to have shows here in the States. I think he'll help move some tickets for them. So I don't see him as champion 6 months from now. I don't see him going into the Tokyo Dome as the champion. But this is something that, again, I saw coming a few months ago just because this company, New Japan, that is, really needs something right now. You know, they've been cold, colder than they were a few years ago. And they have to make some new stars on top. And, you know, you got Ren Narita and you've got Yota Tsuji and you've got Shota Umino. They have younger guys. They have people on that roster who could take the spot that was left vacant by Okada, that could take the spot that was left vacant by Ospreay. But it takes time. And for the longest time, they just didn't do a good enough job of building them up quick enough. And then all of a sudden, these guys disappeared, right? Kota Ibushi, who would have known what happened to him? Actually, probably a lot of people would have predicted what happened to him, crashing and burning with all the stuff that he used to do to himself. But they lost a lot of guys, you know, and Tanahashi, he's not that guy anymore. So it takes time, but they have those guys that they can build up. And I think Umino, I think, is going to be the guy. So to the back, we had a very angry Mercedes Moné, who was attacked in the back last week. If you remember, she was doing a sit-down interview with Alex Marvez, and the lights went out, and we heard a scuffle. And when the lights came back on, she was laid out on the floor. I've seen better skits in high school plays, but she was laid out by a mystery attacker. So she said last week, somebody attacked her in the dark because they were too afraid to face her in the light. But as the CEO, she can't wait to pay back the bitch who attacked her last week. She goes, lights off, huh? That sounds familiar, doesn't it, Julia Hart? She said, maybe Julia doesn't want to face her a double or nothing when she's all healthy. Or it could be that somebody wants her to think that it was Julia. Either way, not to be confused with the Julia who is going to be in NXT in a few months. Apparently, AEW did not make much of a play for Julia. So she is going to WWE instead. This is a different Julia. This is the inferior Julia of the two. And I like Julia Hart, but the inferior of the two. She says either way, she's putting the entire women's division on notice, and she looks forward to watching Willow and Julia's mixed tag match tonight because there is a price to pay when you mess with Mercedes Moné. There you go. That's her catchphrase, I guess. There's a price to pay when you mess with her money. Okay. And that led into the mixed tag, which was Adam Copeland, the TNT champion, teaming with Willow Nightingale against Brody King and Julia Hart, representing the House of Black. After Copeland made his entrance, they played Willow's entrance music. No Willow Nightingale. Instead, they go to the back, and we see up on the Tron that Willow is sitting on the ground. I think she was holding her head and being tended to by Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander, and the trainer was there. She was attacked. Somebody attacked Willow Nightingale. She said she was okay. Clearly, she was not okay, and Statlander was trying to tell her, just, you're not okay, just stay down. So in the arena, they show Copeland is looking up at this like, oh, fuck, I just lost my partner. And the lights in the building go out. And when the lights come back on, Brody King is standing behind him in the ring. He attacks him from behind. Copeland was distracted by Julia Hart because when the lights came back on, she was standing on the ramp. So Brody King attacks him from behind. They end up outside the ring. King sets up Copeland on a chair up against the barricade, and then he hits him with a running crossbody block. Copeland eventually was able to crawl back into the ring. Aubrey Edwards asked him, are you okay? And the match officially began. And they sent us to commercial. So when things came back, Copeland, he fought out of the corner. He hit a top rope clothesline. Both men got up at the same time. They had a slugfest. Copeland staggered him into the corner with a bunch of clotheslines and some big boots. The Impaler DDT connected. King kicked out. Copeland followed with a blockbuster out of the corner and then signaled for the spear. And credit to the crowd. I think they were in Indianapolis tonight. Very loud crowd. I don't know how many people were in the building. Again, they have not had a large attendance for a lot of recent episodes of Dynamite. So I don't know exactly how many people were there, but it sounded very good. And when Copeland went to the corner to set up for the spear, everybody was up for it. King, though, turned him inside out with a lariat as he came in. And then Brody missed a cannonball. Now, here comes Willow Nightingale. She comes down. She storms down to the ring. Big reaction. She makes the tag. And she goes up top. Now, Brody King is still in the ring. Willow goes up top. And she hits a crossbody from the second rope, I believe it was, to take out Brody King. So when King got back up, he got flattened by a spear by Copeland. Cannonball in the corner by Willow. Julia Hart appeared. And she decked Willow with a chain-wrapped fist, which the referee did not see. Copeland, meanwhile, tackles King out of the ring to the floor. So that takes the guys out of the equation. Julia applies her heartless submission on an unconscious Willow Nightingale. And so the referee calls for the bell. And the House of Black picks up the win. So now here comes the CEO. You know how I know this? Because on the screen it says CEO. And because in her music it says CEO. So you can't possibly not know that this is the CEO as she makes her way down to the ring. Chair in hand. Steel chair in hand. Julia Hart quickly scurries away. Mercedes ends up in the ring. Copeland and Willow are in the ring. And she looks at the chair. And then she looks back at Willow, and then she drops the chair, puts her hands up. It was almost like a heel-like reaction, like when the heel is outnumbered by the baby faces, and they back away. So that's sort of what it felt like here. So she puts the chair down. Monet and Copeland end up shaking hands, and the announcers talked about how Mercedes was not yet over that broken ankle. She has not forgotten the broken ankle. In the match with Willow last year when she got hurt. So the boys, they carry the bulk of the work here in this match. I'd be down to see Copeland defend the TNT title against Brody King one-on-one. I wouldn't mind seeing that at Dynasty instead of the trios match they have him in. But I also think as far as, you know, these attacks, last week Mercedes, the lights go out, she's attacked. Here Willow gets attacked. And they want you to think that Julia Hart, they want you to think the House of Black is behind it. It's too obvious. I'm hoping that it's Chris Statlander. I thought Statlander honestly would have been going heel by now. I was calling a heel turn for her a month ago and it didn't happen. But I still think Statlander is going to go heel. Hopefully she'll be the one revealed as the person behind these attacks. Because again, Julia, it would be too obvious. And I would like to see Statlander against Mercedes. I would like to see Statlander against Willow. That interests me. But the way that Willow lost here, you know, she got punched in the face and knocked out. Julia Hart picks up the win going into Dynasty on Sunday. I think that bodes well for Willow's chances going into the pay-per-view. And honestly, she should be the one defending that title against Mercedes at Double or Nothing. They have history together. Mercedes and Julia have no history together. And frankly, it's the more appealing of the two matches would be Willow and Mercedes finishing what they started and did not get to finish last year. So hopefully that is what we end up getting. Now, Renee was backstage with the AEW World Champion, Samoa Joe, for a sit-down interview. Joe always, he thrives in these environments. Joe is fantastic when it comes to these promos. He said, Swerve is more of a nuisance than a worthy adversary. No matter how many times he puts Swerve in the dirt, he keeps rising up, which reminds him more of a punching bag than a future world champion. And Renee talked about Swerve and Prince Nana holding up the AEW title belt last week. And Joe said that he was worried about how his title might need to be disinfected after last week. And he pointed out to Renee, he goes, you know where Prince Nana hangs out. So Joe called Strickland a choke artist who comes close to winning the big one but always comes up short. History will repeat itself at Dynasty, and Joe will cement his legacy as the greatest AEW world champion of all time. Strickland is a choke artist, but at Dynasty, Joe will be the one to choke him out. Great stuff. And the first of two backstage interviews with the men in the main event on Sunday. Now, we got the start of a video package for the FTR Young Bucks match. They're having a ladder match at Dynasty this weekend. We only got to see part of it, though, because Matthew and Nicholas, they call for Tony Khan to cut the video short. And so then they came back with a live shot of the two of them at the gorilla position. Then they had, or at least Matthew had the headset on. And so they cut the video short. And he apologized, Matthew did, to FTR and said, look, the show is just too stacked tonight. We just don't have time for your video package. But, you know, he looks at Tony Khan. He goes, we'll make sure we get it on the socials. We'll make sure we post it on there so everybody can see it. So Okada was with them. He was standing in the background. Okada spoke briefly. He said Pac, who he's defending his Continental title against on Sunday, Pac won't make it to Dynasty. He said that Pac was a dead man. The camera pulled back and showed Tony Khan was sitting there at the table at the gorilla position. And Matthew told Tony to hit their music as they were out next for their match, their trios match here. Yeah, we've had a couple of different, actually more than a couple, of segments on the show in recent weeks where you've got Tony Khan taking, you know, orders here from Bootleg Matt and Jeff. Tony Khan is supposed to be the president and CEO of this company. I know Mercedes calls herself the CEO, but Tony Khan is supposed to be the CEO, right? He's supposed to be the boss of this company. And yet he allows his EVPs to boss him around. Perhaps CM Punk was right. Maybe Tony Khan is not a real boss, because I don't understand why he allows these two to jerk him around every single week. But up next, it was the Young Bucks and Okada against Pac, Penta, and Daniel Garcia. Now, it looked early on like we were going to get Pac and Okada to begin, but the Bucks attacked Pac from behind. And Okada went and took out Penta and Garcia on the apron. Pac quickly fired back on Matthew. Penta made the tag. Nicholas and Okada, they both got cheap shots in to allow Matthew to take over. Daniel Garcia tagged in. He ran wild, but the Elite ended up in control going into the commercial break. Do we know what Monet is the CEO of yet? She's the CEO of her brand. I don't know how valuable that brand is. I don't know how many people work for that brand, but I guess she's the CEO of her brand, I suppose. I don't know. You're asking the wrong person. How the hell should I know? So when they came back from break, we could hear Matt Jackson over the PA system doing commentary. He was doing running commentary like Jerry Lawler back in the day for his own match on the house mic. Garcia started mounting a comeback. Matthew then tagged in while still doing commentary. And he was trash-talking Garcia, and he yelled at Garcia, show me why we hired you. Come on, show me why we hired you. So Garcia grabs him, picks him up in position for a back suplex, and Matt says, oh, we're good, we're good. And then he drops him for the stalling back suplex. Pac made the tag, hit a series of snap German suplexes, top rope missile drop kick to the Bucks. Followed up with a huge moonsault off the top, outside onto Matt and Nick, before staring down Okada in the middle of the ring. Okada waited for Nick to attack from behind before tagging in, of course. And then Okada delivered an air raid crash. Penta, though, got in and broke up the count. Then Penta tagged in officially, flew off the top with a crossbody to Okada. Sling blades on the Bucks. Made in Japan on Okada, only gets two. So at this point, the match broke down, and Pac flew in with a slingshot cutter on Matthew, made the legal tag, finally went face-to-face with Okada. We got a slugfest. Pac went up top. Nicholas, though, swept out the legs. And Paul Turner just turned around and looked at Daniel Garcia for some reason. Garcia made the tag. He ran right into an Okada dropkick. Voided the tombstone, though, into a jackknife pin for two. Garcia ran into a corner kick from the Bucks and then stumbled into a tombstone from Okada. Here comes Penta. Well, he gets a tombstone also. So the super kick party followed to Garcia while Okada held him. Double super kick, and then with a groggy Daniel Garcia on his feet, Okada spun him out into a rainmaker and then covered him for the win. So no big surprise there that the Elite pick up the win. You're not going to beat them. You're not going to beat Okada. They have a couple of big matches coming up on Sunday. Penta has no match. Daniel Garcia has no match. You know, Pac is wrestling Okada. So no surprise as far as that goes. But when the match was over, they weren't done yet. The Bucks blasted Garcia with the EVP trigger. And then they brought a ladder into the ring. They slammed Garcia onto it. And with Garcia sandwiched in the ladder, Matthew was about to dive off the top when Pac ran in with the hammer for the ring bell. Little callback to the Best of Seven series between the Elite and Death Triangle, where he was using that fucking hammer every single week. Okada and the Bucks, they bailed, and Pac stared down Okada from afar. So no FTR to be found tonight. They did not come out to make the save. We did not see them at all here on this show. Good action. I like that they didn't give too much away between Pac and Okada before their big match coming up on Sunday. Yeah, they gave you just enough to whet your appetite for the singles match and get you interested and wanting to see the two of them go at it. But then they went and announced a match for Collision on Saturday. It's going to be the Young Bucks and Okada taking on Pac and FTR. So I will pay them this compliment now, but it is always possible that they can, you know, prove me wrong on Saturday, and they just wrestle for 10 minutes in the tag team match. Hopefully not. Hopefully they will keep them apart as much as possible. But, you know, Daniel Garcia, I thought that coming out of the Continental Classic, even though he won one match, right, they were still trying to tell the underdog story with him. And I thought maybe they were setting up for something meaningful with him, right? That was back in December. He did get the match with Christian at Revolution for the TNT title. He did not win. If you look at his record since the match with Christian, he's racked up a bunch of wins. You know, there was a four-way on Rampage a couple of weeks ago where he picked up a win. There's a couple of singles matches on Collision. Again, against no-name people, as in people who are not being pushed right now. It's not like he's beating anybody with any name recognition. But it's not also like he's been buried and losing all of his matches. So he lost here. But I could see Okada and Garcia being a Continental title match at some point, probably on TV. I could see that being a match at some point. I don't know what their plans are for him, though. I really don't. You know, they've always been very high on him. There's a reason why, for the longest time, we would call him Main Event Garcia, because every week on TV, this kid was in the main event. And then he was part of Jericho's group, and he got sucked into the vortex of Jericho. Speaking of which, that's the perfect segue. Chris Jericho, Lionheart, was out to the ring for the next segment, and then Hook made his way out. This was a meeting that was brokered by Hook's father, Taz. He was in the ring to moderate. And as soon as Jericho started talking and thanking Taz for getting Hook to come out here, the fans began booing because they do not like this man. Jericho said he yanked Hook off the apron last week during their trios match with Shibata just to get his attention. That's all he meant by that. He wanted to get Hook's attention and let him know that he didn't feel he was listening to him as much as he should be. Because, of course, that's the perfect time to do something like that when you're in the middle of a match trying to win. Let me yank you off the apron so I can teach you a lesson while our partner is in the ring to fend for himself. He said he's doing all of this for Hook. Some say that he's the greatest of all time. Everybody booed. He says he is the learning tree. Last week he was talking about the learning tree. Jericho now is calling himself the learning tree. I give it about 5 minutes before he trademarks that term. He's already trademarked Vortex of Jericho. He's trademarked a couple of other things. I kind of feel like this guy sits at home on the shitter going to the bathroom, and he's got a little notepad, and he's just, anything that comes to mind, he's jotting down. Got to talk to my lawyer. We'll get this trademarked. We'll get that trademarked. I would love to know how many terms he has trademarked and how many are actually in usage right now. There was a term, I don't remember what it was. It was at some point last year. He was trying to get it over, and you knew from day one, like, this is never going to get over. And then we never heard anything about it again. Probably a trademark that's laying dormant, that's not even being used. He said, think of all the people in AEW that have listened to his perfect parables and his pearls of wisdom and have gotten to the next level. He said, MJF, Orange Cassidy, Eddie Kingston. Of course, who was Eddie Kingston before he worked with Chris Jericho, right? Nobody knew who he was. Danny Garcia, John Moxley. Of course. Who knew who this John Moxley guy was before he was made famous by Chris Jericho, right? When he beat Jericho to win the world title. Mention Will Ospreay, so many more. Everyone that's come into the Jericho vortex, he says, has come out the other side a better performer and a better person as well. And that's what he wants for Hook. He wants them to get to the top of Wizard Mountain. Up, oh, there's another one. Wizard Mountain. Yeah, that one's going nowhere. The top of Wizard Mountain so that they can both breathe in the rarefied air of Jericho. So he can help him get to the top. And he asks Hook if he's ready to sit under the branches of the learning tree. Oh, right, GFY. There it is. That's what it was. I couldn't remember what it was that Jericho was trying to get over. That's right. GFY. Whatever happened to GFY? So he asks Hook, are you ready to sit under the branches of the learning tree? Hook said no. And Jericho said, what do you mean no? Hook said, I don't need your help. And Jericho told him, don't be stupid. So Taz interjected. He broke in. He told him, relax. Jericho told Taz to stop. He said, I'm just doing what Taz should have done 30 years ago and giving this kid some proper guidance. He turned back to Hook. Hook hasn't even been alive for 30 years. How old is Hook? Like mid-20s? So he turned his back to Hook and he told him that he needs to get rid of all this dead weight that's been surrounding him his entire life. And again, Taz told him, hey, calm down. And again, Jericho told him to stop. He said, Hook is not ready and is not as good as he thinks he is. So Taz went to go speak and Jericho shoved him. And Taz fell into the rope. He didn't fall down, like take a full-fledged bump. But he kind of fell into the ropes and then very slowly, you know, fell to his knees. And Excalibur said that people may not know this, but Taz has been suffering from a knee issue for many years. So Hook did not immediately do anything. Hook was still in the opposite corner and he was staring at Jericho. He was burning a hole through Jericho. And he stood there for a bit. And finally he came in, he grabbed Jericho by his jacket. He backed him into the corner. And he told Jericho, you crossed the line. He goes, if Jericho wants to see how good he is, he'll show him again. Anytime, any place, anywhere. Now get out of my ring. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, coming out of WrestleMania weekend, I can say that my social battery is basically running on empty right now. This time of year for me is usually my busiest. There's so much going on. I don't leave enough time for anything else, and I tend to not be as social until the weather gets nicer anyway. It could be very easy to spread myself thin with work. I need to change that. For some of you, your social battery may be low because you don't like hanging around other people to begin with, or maybe life just has you very worn down. Therapy can give you the self-awareness that you need to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Since you first started hearing me talk about BetterHelp, I've gotten messages from people that have taken advantage of the service, telling me how much it's really helped them with whatever problems they may have been dealing with. Therapy in general can have so many benefits for you. Just having someone to talk to and to get that guidance Maybe you don't have the motivation or the confidence on your own or the knowledge even on how best to deal with the stress and the anxiety that you're probably going through right now. It can be life-changing for you. And it isn't just for people that have been through a trauma in their lives, but it can certainly help you there too if you have. If you're thinking of starting therapy, do yourself a favor. Give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be flexible enough to fit into your schedule. To get started, you just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and they make it incredibly easy to switch therapists at any time for no additional charge if you need to do so. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. If you've been thinking about it, seriously, don't put it off. That's what the offer is there for. Make sure you take advantage of it. BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. Let me first say this. Nobody should ever be sucked into the vortex of Jericho. That's like Green Man. You know, you watch the Raw reviews that I do here on the channel on Monday nights. Sometimes I have little Green Man trying so hard to avoid falling into the hole with, you know, the 3-hour Raw hole. That's the vortex of Jericho, and poor Hook is trying not to be sucked into the hole. So all you people that root on Little Green Man every week, you need to be rooting on Hook to not follow in the same direction that other people bought before him, Action Andretti and all these other people that have worked with Jericho. Some people that have worked with Jericho for months and months and months on end. Let's hope that Hook does not fall into that same fate. Don't fall into that hole, kid. Whatever you do. Now, Taz was interesting here because Taz has not taken a bump or really done anything physical in many, many years. So it's not really a surprise that he would make an exception for his own kid. So he got shoved here by Jericho. The best thing I could say about any of this, because I don't care about, you know, this stuff here and Jericho being involved, I just can't bring myself to care. But the best thing that I could say about this is after Hook lost to Samoa Joe, I said the thing that Tony Khan needs to do is not allow Hook to just fade away. Because that's happened before. Hook was pushed for a while. He had the team with Danhausen. They had him doing some stuff. And then it's like he kind of vanished. Or you would only see him on Rampage, which is basically as good as vanishing. So the key was find him things to do. Just make sure that he's visible on television. So he is visible. At least he's given him something to do. But I should have put a little asterisk next to that when I said that and said anything but this. Because again, it's just hard to care about any of this stuff. It's hard to care about anything that Jericho is doing of late. He is somebody who would benefit greatly by going away for several months and then coming back as a heel. But that's not going to happen. Not only is that not going to happen, but we found out later in the show that Chris Jericho is wrestling Hook. It will be for the FTW Championship on Sunday at Dynasty. May as well be the FML title. Because, you know, Jericho is going to win this title. Like, you got to know that Jericho, because he already lost once to Hook, right? And you know Jericho's not going to let this go after one more match. They're going to drag this out. Double or Nothing, maybe Forbidden Door. Who knows? Who knows how long this is going to go on for? Jericho won the Ring of Honor world title, right? Became the Ocho. Gets to add another title now, another meaningless title to his resume. Renee was backstage to conduct a sit-down interview, her second of the night, this time with Swerve Strickland. Now it was his turn. Samoa Joe went first, now it's Swerve's turn. Swerve asked if Renee thinks that he's a choke artist. And Renee said no. Swerve said, I didn't think so. He said he always gets back up. Over the past year, he's fallen into a coffin. He's been stapled. His body was thrown into barbed wire, and he always gets back up. He said it's his military upbringing and his warrior ethos. Joe can call him anything he wants, but this Sunday he'll be calling him the new AEW World Heavyweight Champion. Swerve stood up, he took his mic off and his jacket. He said, you know, I'm going to tell Joe to his face why I'm so confident in the ring tonight. So again, I like dueling promos here from champion and challenger going into the main event on Sunday, and then teasing one more face-to-face later in the show. Sounds good to me. That led to the obligatory women's singles match here of the night. Deonna Purrazzo one-on-one with Mariah May, out to the ring with Timeless Toni Storm and Luther. Storm saved Mariah from a baseball slide early and allowed allowed May, as in Mariah May, to gain control, slam Deonna into the barricade. Back inside, Mariah tried a shoulder block through the ropes, but Purrazzo caught her and hit a draping arm breaker. Mariah quickly regained control, tried to hit a corner head scissors, got blocked, and so she just sent Purrazzo crashing to the outside, and we were sent crashing into picture and picture. Purrazzo connected on a pump kick for a near fall. Mariah floated over a powerbomb attempt, sent Deonna into the corner, delivered sweet cheek music. And for the finish, Mariah wanted Mayday. Purrazzo countered into a roll-up, and she got the flash pin on Mariah May. Now, immediately, as soon as this match was over, I don't even think 2 seconds went by, the AEW Women's World Champion hits the ring. Toni Storm attacks Deonna from behind. That brings out Thunder Rosa, who sprints down to the ring, and she ran right through Luther. I don't know if this guy didn't hold the elevator door for her in the back or what this guy did to her, but Rosa just ran this fucking guy over. She got in the ring, cleaned house. Deonna got up in her face. I don't want your help. Mariah pulled Purrazzo to the floor at that point. Toni Storm tried to hit Storm Zero on Rosa, but she escaped, and then she trapped Toni in a camel clutch, pulled out some lipstick, and she smeared the lipstick all over Toni Storm's face. Now, we've seen Toni Storm herself smear lipstick all over her face, so I'm not sure why this would have bothered her, unless the fact that maybe it was a different shade. Maybe that's what bothered her? I don't know. I guess it was someone else doing it, so she didn't like it. Renee was backstage with Switchblade Jay White and the Guns, who told her to sound more excited to be around the Bang Bang Gang. White said that they'd been having a blast the past few months and said they are going to fulfill their destiny at Dynasty, as the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn have what they want. So it's going to be the AEW Trios titles against the Ring of Honor six-man titles at Dynasty. Winners take all. Thank Christ. It is time to merge these titles. I'll be honest with you. It's time. It feels to me like it's time to get rid of all six belts, but it's time to merge these titles and be done with the Ring of Honor six-man titles once and for all. The most useless set of titles in all of wrestling. Even more so than the WWE Women's Tag Team titles. More so than the AEW Trios titles, which also haven't really been treated as anything special in a very long time. Those Ring of Honor six-man belts, they serve no purpose. Especially when you have them on AEW television. You know, if it was something exclusive to Ring of Honor, I could justify it and say, all right, it's the Ring of Honor version of the Trios belt, so whatever. But when you're mixing and you're putting them on AEW television where we already have Trios titles, there's no point to it. So, that's a check. That's a check mark for Tony Khan. Good job. Overdue, but good job. It's about time we get rid of these belts. Now, as long as the belts end up on the right people, which brings us to the next segment here. After the break, Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed, they were in the back. They accepted the challenge issued by Bullet Club Gold. Billy said that he beat Jay White's ass, and he has beaten the hell out of his sons since they were kids. This is what he said. He admitted this on TV here. He's a bigger deadbeat than Ray is. I said the other day, Dominic was right. Rey Mysterio, he did an interview recently. He was asked about the custody of Dominic ladder match against Eddie Guerrero, and he said if he had it to do all over again, he would tell Eddie, keep him. I don't want him. Because he's a deadbeat. And so is Billy Gunn for beating his sons. So Max Caster challenged the Guns to face him and Anthony Bowens in just a regular tag team match on Collision. I did find it a little strange that we had the heels issuing the winner-take-all challenge and not the baby faces. I kind of feel like that was backwards. It should have been the other way around. But so long as Bullet Club Gold gets the win on Sunday, that's all that matters. You know, that match with Billy Gunn that Jay White had a few weeks ago with Billy Gunn was so counterproductive that I cannot imagine anybody in the right frame of mind booking a finish on Sunday anything other than having Jay White pin Billy Gunn. Just to put a period on it, and again, bring the Trios titles over, merge them, have one set of AEW Trios belts, but can we let Jay White please get a win, his win back over Billy Gunn, or are we not allowed to do that? Any other outcome to me on Sunday is ridiculous. I mean, this should be the easiest thing in the world to book. We had Orange Cassidy one-on-one with Shane Taylor, who was out there with Lee Moriarty and Anthony Ogogo, representing Shane Taylor Promotions. Excalibur brought up how Katsuyori Shibata is in Japan, Rocky Romero is in Mexico, Chuck Taylor is off the road due to injury, and with Trent Barretta turning his back on him, Orange Cassidy is now left alone with no friends. From best friends to no friends. He's out there all by himself. Cassidy puts his hands in his pockets, hit a few drop kicks and kip-ups before trying a spinning DDT, only to get caught with a Tower of London stunner. Taylor took the referee that allowed Moriarty to attack. Taylor controlled through the commercial break, and then when things came back, Cassidy fired up. He hit two dives out onto Ogogo and Moriarty. Taylor ducked an orange punch and then leveled Cassidy with a lariat for two. Shane avoided a beach break. Cassidy, though, hit one orange punch. Taylor answered with a hard shot of his own until Cassidy threw a desperation orange punch, and he got the pin on Shane Taylor. After the match, Moriarty attacked, and Ogogo hit a big left hand to the gut, just like he did to Cody Rhodes. It's one of the only things I remember about Anthony Ogogo from that first run before he disappeared. Right, he was hitting people with those liver shots. Remember, he gave one of those kidney blows to Cody when they wrestled? I think Cody's doing all right for himself right now. Ogogo seems to be stuck in neutral, but Cody's doing all right. So Taylor was about to lay out Orange Cassidy when here comes Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal. They're coming out to try to make the save. Both men were laid out by chair shots from Trent Barretta, who was in a hoodie and then revealed himself. And when I say chair shots, I mean, he chucked that chair right at his head. And I don't understand this. You know, we know about chair shots to the head and we don't really see them anymore, certainly not in WWE. But now they've been replaced by flying chairs, which actually sounds even more dangerous to me. We had a flying chair hit Rhea Ripley in the head from Liv Morgan on Raw last week. We've had flying chairs here in AEW. We had, I think, two of them here in this one segment alone. I mean, do they think that just because someone is not physically swinging the chair that it can't do any damage? Like, why are we seeing all these flying chairs all of a sudden? Who deemed that it was okay to at least let the chairs fly? That's a lot safer. No, it's not. It's stupid. But Barretta took out all the help that Orange Cassidy might have gotten here. So he's in the ring on his knees being held by Shane and his goons. And Barretta's looking up and he goes, he's all yours. And so Taylor flattens Cassidy with a right hand. And Moriarty applied the Border City stretch. So Shane Taylor Promotions stands tall here to end the segment. I will say, you know, Shane Taylor is impressive, you know, as a performer. His win-loss record is not. That much I will tell you. Cassidy wins, though, because the match they're building to is not Shane Taylor against anybody. The match they're building to is Orange Cassidy against Trent Barretta. But they don't need to rush into it. for a minute there, I thought they were going to tack this onto the card on Sunday, which would have been ridiculous because they already have enough matches to begin with. But we haven't even gotten the promo yet from Trent Barretta to explain why he did what he did. We haven't even gotten there yet. So they could take their time with this. I don't know. I was going to say, you know, Double or Nothing. I don't know if this is a Double or Nothing match. They could probably do this on TV. Maybe it ends up being a Double or Nothing match. But again, we still haven't even gotten the explanation yet from Trent. Then we had the main event, which was Will Ospreay one-on-one with Claudio Castagnoli, first time ever. I was looking forward to this one. It did not disappoint. Claudio charged right from the bell. Ospreay was able to avoid a Ricola bomb. Ospreay tried a head scissors, got planted, though, with a backbreaker. And Ospreay fought back some one Hurricanrana, but he sent Claudio to the floor. Claudio tried sending Ospreay into the barricade. Ospreay, though, cleared it, and then he actually pulled the top part of it off, stood on top of it, flew off with Pip-Pip Cheerio. Back inside, Ospreay hit a head scissors and then sent Claudio back to the floor. But when Ospreay came flying out, he caught him and then planted him back first onto the edge of the apron. So during the commercial, the final commercial break, it was all Claudio. Ospreay, though, battled back with a Huluva kick, followed with another Pip-Pip Cheerio forearm for a two count. Claudio ate a few Kawada kicks. Ospreay briefly applied a sharpshooter, but Claudio was able to pull the leg out from under him so that he had the hold applied, and then he transitioned into a crossface. Both men made it to their feet eventually. Claudio dodged a kick, tried a springboard uppercut, but Ospreay hit a thrust kick in midair into a tiger driver for a near fall. Ospreay wanted the Stormbreaker, but Claudio rushed him in the corner and got an eye poke. A ripcord lariat got a near fall. That left Claudio very frustrated. So Ospreay is just eating uppercuts until kipping up into an enziguri. Ospreay countered out of a Ricola bomb into a Hurricanrana pin attempt. Only got 2.5. It was close, though. Claudio caught Ospreay's Oscutter attempt in midair into what resembled something of a burning hammer. Ospreay was in deep trouble here. Claudio went for a home run shot, but Ospreay met him with a Spanish fly, and then he signaled for the hidden blade, but he ran into a pop-up uppercut. Claudio tried a giant swing. Ospreay pulled himself up into a tornado DDT, went up top, hit the leap of faith for two, and then finally Ospreay connected on a hidden blade and picked up the win. The crowd was going nuts. Down the stretch for this match, they were loving what they were seeing, and so was I. Now, when the match was over, Powerhouse Hobbs, Konosuke Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, they all hit the ring. They attacked Claudio, threw him outside. Takeshita was going to go deliver a brainbuster on the ramp when John Moxley's music hits. And here comes John Moxley from the crowd to rescue his fellow Blackpool member. And he starts slugging it out with Hobbs. Of course, that's our main event for next week. Claudio and Takeshita, they went at it. Moxley and Claudio held their own. Ospreay did not participate in any of this. He didn't take part in any of the post-match stuff. He looked upset over what was going on and ended up walking off. I'm not sure at this point why he would even still be associated with Callis and the Callis family. Obviously, he will not be with them for much longer, but why he would even still be hanging around them is a mystery to me. But that is how the segment ended. And again, Will Ospreay continues to impress. What more can I say? He's the best in the world, bell to bell. There is no performer right now in pro wrestling, bell to bell, more dynamic and fun to watch than Will Ospreay. And he's got these people behind him. So, you know, when I talk about your next babyface, your next AEW world champion after Swerve Strickland, it's this guy. It's Swerve. And it's Ospreay in the main event at Wembley Stadium. If I'm booking, that's the main event that I book. You got two very popular baby faces right here, but Ospreay is the guy who is going to be the face of this company, who they build around as their top guy. And that'll be before this year is over. So Swerve is going to get his shot. He's going to get his run. But Ospreay is the guy. I mean, Ospreay, from the moment he signed that full-time deal and showed up on Dynamite, I mean, he's been over like gangbusters ever since. I mean, the fans took to him a hell of a lot quicker than I would have thought as the top babyface. You know, last time we saw him, he was the heel. But Ospreay's that guy. I mean, there's nothing he can do. Just so much fun to watch. And as far as Sunday is concerned, I mean, we'll get into the predictions here in a second. But as great as this match was, and as great as a lot of his recent television matches have been, the match is the match that we're getting on Sunday. But we weren't done yet. Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana were out to the ring, and we were already past the top of the hour, so we got a little overrun here. Swerve had a mic in his hand. He said he was asked a question earlier, how does he believe he is going to beat Samoa Joe? The answer is simple. Last week, when he knocked Joe on the ground and he was scurrying across the ground like a little bitch, and he held Joe's title above his head, he showed Swerve everything he needed to see. He looks scared because he knows that Swerve is taking that title from him. He's just waiting right here with the people of Indianapolis for Samoa Joe to come on out here so he could tell him the same exact thing to his face. So they played the champ's music. And out comes Samoa Joe. He is already surrounded by security geeks who you know are going to be on their back in a matter of moments. Now Joe makes it all the way down to the foot of the ramp. And now there's like a wall of security blocking him from getting into the ring. Swerve doesn't give a shit. He climbs to the top rope. And Swerve comes diving off with a swerve stomp. And he swerve stomped the security geeks, and they all fell down like a house of cards. Yeah, you pull the card out, the whole thing falls down. It was a cool visual. I mean, again, as ridiculous as it is, but he stomped them all down. Now he stands up. Joe can't believe it. He's got a shocked look on his face. And the two of them come face to face. They end up coming to blows. Joe gets him in the ring. And then he notices that Prince Nana is kneeling over Swerve, tending to Swerve as Joe gets in the ring. And they got a cool shot. It's kind of like over Nana's shoulder. And then in the background, Nana's in the foreground. And in the background, you see Joe. And he's starting to do the dance. He's doing the Prince Nana dance. So Prince Nana turns around and sees this. And now he's scared. Right, because he sees this giant Samoan over here dancing, and that means death is imminent. So Nana backs into the corner. He's looking terrified. But Joe took his eye off Swerve. He turned his back to him. Here comes Swerve out of nowhere, boots him in the face. Swerve hits the house call kick, goes up to the top rope. Joe gets back up and crotches him. And then Joe stares him dead in his face. And he yells at him, he goes, "You're not that man." And he sets him up for a muscle buster and drops him. And it was Samoa Joe who was left standing tall over the challenger to close out the show. Exactly as it should have been. Exactly as I expected it to be going into Dynasty on Sunday. You have the champion standing tall over the challenger. You can't beat me. You're a choke artist. You're not that guy. All the things that Joe has been saying to him and running him down and trying to drill into people's heads that, again, this guy, when it matters most and it counts, he cracks under pressure and he can't get the job done. They are teeing you up as much as they possibly can to try to convince you that, well, maybe Swerve is not that guy, but of course we all know Swerve is that guy. The fans know that he's that guy. I mean, just the reactions he's getting every single week tell you that. And so it all builds now to Sunday, where Swerve is going to go in there and try to become the first black AEW World Heavyweight Champion of all time. He's talked about this before and how meaningful that would be to him. But I just look at him and I go, him being a world champion, period, is something that's long overdue. And I sometimes look at the success that he's had and I see how things are in WWE right now, where we are, in case you don't know, because they beat you over the head with it, it's the Paul Levesque era now. So now Triple H is fully in charge. And I wonder how things might be different had Swerve, let's say, come back, or if he never left, and now he's working for Triple H. Would Triple H and WWE have seen him in the same way? Would he have gotten over the same way as he has here in AEW? Because that program he had with Hangman Page is what elevated him to that next level. Hangman Page, former AEW World Champion, right, big baby face at the time. Those two went out there from that first match they had at Wrestle Dream, and then, of course, the Texas Death Match at Full Gear, which was just beyond insanity. That feud is what elevated him to that next level. That feud, that program, is what opened up a lot of eyes when it comes to Swerve as, you know what, I could buy this guy in a top spot. I could buy this guy as a world champion in this company. And then he just got over organically. This is a guy who, in storyline, broke into the man's home and terrorized his wife and young child. And the fans turned him babyface. It's kind of like Liv Morgan on Raw Monday night, right? Rhea Ripley gets hurt. Rhea Ripley is the one who injured Liv Morgan and put her on the shelf for 8 months. Everybody cheers Rhea Ripley. And now they boo Liv Morgan because she dared get revenge on the woman who took her out, right? That's just the way the fans are sometimes. There's no rhyme or reason for it. The fans are very fickle. The fans like what they like, and they don't like what they don't like. So it's funny how things worked out. But I do think that under a different administration, Swerve would have fared a lot better in WWE. Although I don't think that he regrets making the decision that he made, because I'd say he's in a pretty good spot right now. But as I said at the beginning of the review, a much more focused show than last week, focused on the important stuff, focused on the right things, not the wrong things, not stuff from 7 months ago. You have a pay-per-view coming up on Sunday. Focus on that show. That's what they did tonight. I enjoyed the stuff with Joe and Swerve. I love that main event. Great match there. Actually, a couple of really good matches on this show. I enjoyed the Elite Trios match as well. Not as much as the main event, though. But it made for a much better show this week. I don't even think it could be debated. Much better show this week. Nice rebound from that garbage last week. I say garbage. The entire show wasn't garbage, but the stuff they did basically rendered everything else on the show irrelevant. They needed a show like this. Now we are heading into a pay-per-view. I'll get to the poll in a second, what you guys thought of the show, but we have a pay-per-view on Sunday. It is AEW Dynasty. And on paper, as I look at this lineup here, and again, this is the case with the vast majority of AEW pay-per-views, it is a very, very strong lineup. And there are, I mean, as I look over the card here, you've got three matches here, I would say. Actually, you know what? Throw the ladder match in. You got four matches here that could potentially steal the show. We'll start from the very bottom and work our way up, though. This is the updated card. There is one match announced for the 0 Hour pre-show. I would expect them to add more. But it's going to be Billy Gunn and the Acclaim taking on Jay White and the Guns. Winner take all. AEW Trios titles, Ring of Honor six-man titles are on the line here. Please, for the love of God, merge these belts and move on. Move Jay White to anything else but this. How many months have they been cavorting around here with the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn? As enemies and then friends and now enemies again, they could close the book on this once and for all on Sunday, and they will do it, I predict and I hope, with a Bullet Club Gold win. I'm not calling them the Bang Bang Gang. They're still Bullet Club Gold to me. And Jay White should be the one to pin Billy Gunn to do it. Winner take all, you get rid of the Ring of Honor six-man belts. Put them in a trunk, put them in a warehouse somewhere, lock them away. Maybe one day if there's an AEW Hall of Fame or a Ring of Honor, well, there is a Ring of Honor Hall of Fame, nothing physical, maybe they'll be on display somewhere. They don't need to be on TV anymore. We have Hook defending the FTW Championship against Chris Jericho. I want Hook to win. I know better. I'm predicting that Chris Jericho is going to be the FTW World Champion. FML. Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe, trios match against Malachi Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews. Buddy Matthews, who is going to be nursing Rhea Ripley back to health over these next few months. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. Godspeed, my friend. I think Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe get the win here, but I said before, I want to see Copeland and Brody King, one-on-one TNT title. They could book it on TV in the next few weeks. I'd like to see that match. We have the International Championship on the line. Roderick Strong representing the Undisputed Kingdom defending the title against Kyle O'Reilly. The turn happened on Collision this past weekend, where Roddy turned on Kyle, so now they're wrestling for the title. I don't see a title change here. I think this is going to continue on. So I have Roderick Strong retaining. But you know what? I'll even throw that on the list, too. I said four matches. You got five matches here, including this one, that could potentially steal the show. You got Kyle O'Reilly against Roderick Strong. I mean, that's going to be a hell of a match, too. That's why I say on paper, you know, you look at some of these matches and up and down, it's just like, okay, banger after banger after banger here. The potential is great with this card. We have the Continental Champion, Kazuchika Okada, is going to defend his title against Pac. Okada is not losing this title. I don't know when Kenny Omega is coming back, but Okada is going to keep that belt warm until he is ready to return. It's going to be a hell of a match, but there will not be a new champion. Okada retains. I wouldn't beat Okada at all. Until Kenny is able to return and you could do that match, I don't beat Okada at all. He should be booked like Gunther, the final boss champion. TBS Championship on the line. Julia Hart defends against Willow Nightingale. This should be a Willow Nightingale win. I'm pulling for Willow. I want Willow and Mercedes at Double or Nothing. I think that's the match you do. Willow should win the title here. Keep your eye out, though, for Chris Statlander, because I still think the heel turn is coming any week now. We have the AEW Tag Team titles up for grabs. It is the finals of the Tag Team title tournament. The Young Bucks and FTR. I believe this is part four. And it will be a ladder match. And they are fighting for the right to become the first ever three-time AEW Tag Team champions. I think that this is the stipulation that they're using to set up for the return of Jack Perry. I think Jack Perry is all wrapped up with New Japan for now, and I think he's coming back. I think he's going to help the Bucks win. I think Perry is joining the Elite, and the Young Bucks are going to be the AEW Tag Team Champions. Now, I should also mention, because it was news that was broken a few days ago, that it appears, and this is per Cassidy Haynes of BodySlam.net, who broke the story, that the Motor City Machine Guns, Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, who are free agents as of the beginning of the month, are on their way into AEW. And while I was interested to see what they would do in WWE and to give that tag division a nice boost, they always seemed like a better fit for AEW. And that's exactly where they're going. Now, Cassidy says that the deal is not going to be done for a little while, so I don't know that they would show up at Dynasty on Sunday. But the deal is apparently going to be made and they are on their way in. So when the Bucks win the belts, we could end up getting the Bucks and the Motor City Machine Guns feuding for the AEW Tag Team titles coming out of this. Not right away, but maybe that's the match for Wembley. Maybe that's an all-in match. Maybe it's the Guns and the Bucks. We have the AEW Women's World title on the line. Timeless Toni Storm defends against Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa is great. Thunder Rosa is not winning the AEW Women's World title. She is somebody. She is a warm body for them to put in there to lose until the time comes for either Mariah May or someone else. I guess it would probably be Mariah May, if anybody, because Mercedes is going after the TBS title first. So it's not going to be Thunder Rosa. Toni Storm is going to retain her title. We have the main event. Double main event, I should say. Bryan Danielson, one-on-one with Will Ospreay for the first time ever. What can I say about this match? You have in one corner a man who has been thought of by many, many people as the best wrestler in the world, the best technical wrestler in the world for many, many years. There are awards that are named after this man. That's Bryan Danielson. On the other side of the ring is a man who I would argue is the best in the world today and has been now for a few years. Bell to bell, that man is Will Ospreay. You take Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson, you ring the bell, you let them do their thing, magic will happen. I'm expecting nothing more than a technical masterclass between these two men. Much as we got between Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr., this has the potential to be even better than that. I can't wait. Going to be great. This is just the obligatory, take two great wrestlers, ring the bell, let them do their thing. You don't need to muck it all up by coming up with some convoluted story or introducing other people. Like, you need story in your matches. You got so many matches on the show that you can have plenty of story for. This one, the story is the simplest one you could ever tell. They're jockeying to find out who the better man is, who is the best wrestler in the world. That's it. That's all you need to know. It's no different than when Danielson stepped in there with Okada for the first time. What's the story? The story is, who is the best in the world? That's the story. And it's no different here. And this will be a win for Will Ospreay. Can't see any other outcome here but Will Ospreay picking up the win. He will continue to rack up wins until it is time for him to challenge for the world title, and I could see that happening by the time they get to Wembley in August, but he's got to keep winning. Keep racking up wins, and then eventually you could do that big title match with Will Ospreay on one side, and who on the other? Well, let's talk about the main event, because the main event is for the AEW world title. It's Samoa Joe defending against Swerve Strickland. This is Swerve's moment. He talks about how it's Swerve's house. Well, it's Swerve's house. Everybody else is just renting the unit downstairs. It's now or never. He had an opportunity the last time. He didn't walk out with the title. Now he's getting a one-on-one opportunity for the championship. I think it's got to happen now. This just feels like the right time to pull the trigger and do that title change. And I didn't feel that way for Revolution at the beginning of March. And I said, I'd like for Joe to hold on to it for a little while longer, maybe Double or Nothing. And look, they could do something here where Joe holds on to the title. They run it back one more time, maybe with a stipulation. And then in Las Vegas, Swerve gets the win. I wouldn't wait. You can't have Samoa Joe go in there and prove all the naysayers right. He's a choke artist. He can't get the job done. Joe smacked him down in those promos that he's been doing. Now he's got to go out there and prove him wrong. And that's exactly what he's going to do. Swerve Strickland will make history this weekend and will become the brand new AEW World Heavyweight Champion. That is where the focus needs to be. Not on all of this other nonsense and all of this other drama. That right there should be the big story for this company coming out of this month. And the sad thing is, when this month is over, it won't be. But it should be. And it will be when this weekend is over. And then I think you are looking at Ospreay and Swerve for Wembley in August. I think that's your main event. So I will be live on YouTube on Sunday, or early Monday morning, I suppose. As soon as the pay-per-view is over, for the full recap, as always, you guys know that. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of this go-home show, this go-home Dynamite here before Dynasty? I'm surprised at that rating. I don't think that's high enough, but that's my opinion. 47% thumbs up, 26% thumbs in the middle, and 27% thumbs down. I'm not saying it's an 80% thumbs up show, but I would have said somewhere in the 60 range at least. But there you go, 47% thumbs up so far. So people thought of this show tonight. Go ahead and vote at Solomonster on X. Arabian Knight 2000 wants to know which year in WWE was worse creatively. Says 1995 or 2019. Well, as somebody who vividly remembers 1995. I mean, I don't even remember every single story from 2019. Not everything in 2019 was garbage. 95 was pretty fucking bad, though. So I'm going to go 1995. Jose Hitch with a $10 super chat. I know it is not the best solution, but do you think AEW Shop incorporates... I think he means should, not shop. You're not talking about the t-shirt website, are you? AEW should incorporate more mixed tag matches into their shows. I feel it could help elevate and showcase more women wrestlers as well as the men's mid-card. You know, I'm not even, honestly, I'm not even against that idea. I'm not against that idea. But you would have to get rid of some of the other titles they have. I would not necessarily be against having, for example, mixed tag team titles in place of the trios belts. I would not add them in addition to. But I think your point is a valid one, because there are a lot of complaints about a lack of visibility for some of the women on Dynamite, more so than, you know, any of the other shows. And that would be kind of a clever way to get more of them on television. But also, I think there's the potential to have some pretty interesting matchups in mixed tag situations. So they don't even necessarily need titles for it. That's just more if they wanted to make it a regular thing. I'm down for that, though. You know, again, the mixed tag match tonight was not really much of a mixed tag match, because Willow came in late. They did the injury angle with her. But I think that would be a clever way to get more women involved in matches on Dynamite, and kind of a fun way to mix things up. I'm not against the idea. I don't hate it. The Juliet says, announcer Carlos Cabrera has signed with AEW. Tony Khan confirmed on Twitter. Also, congrats to Ruby Soho. So for those who may have missed it, Ruby Soho in the building in a segment with Angelo Parker after Dynamite told Angelo in the middle of the ring, and apparently it is real, not just a storyline, that she is pregnant. So if in fact that is legit, congratulations to the both of them. That is very cool. I guess we will not be seeing her for a while. So congrats to them both. And yes, I did see that Carlos Cabrera, who for years, decades, did Spanish language commentary for WWE, is now officially All Elite and will be doing commentary for them on the Spanish commentary side. We got Kate Love showing some love and dropping a $10 super check. Kate, thank you very much. Much love to you. Daddy-O says, we need MJF. I miss MJF. Apparently, he had some pretty significant injuries. And it may be a while yet before we see him, but the sooner we get him back, the better. I miss Adam Cole, too. You know, Adam Cole in the ring. It was a huge blow, them going down at the same time with major injuries. Hopefully, we'll get MJF back very soon. Hey, Jesse, welcome to the channel. Larry Jester, what prevented King of the Ring from becoming the fifth biggest pay-per-view? Vince McMahon and a lack of pay-per-view buys. The reason that he junked the pay-per-view after 2002 is because he didn't feel like it was really doing much business. So he killed it. Brought it back as a television gimmick. So if you want to blame anybody, you can blame him. You can blame him and the people who didn't buy the pay-per-view. Base Beerus, thank you for the $2. Also says, Easy Lover was the right answer for best Phil song. I said best Phil Collins song, Easy Lover. Retro KOH, what is the most embarrassing typo that you have ever made in your notes? Oh my God. In my notes here? There's been some fucking hilarious ones. I mean, the one from the other night is pretty high up on the list when I meant to say that Rey Mysterio took a bump off the apron, and it said dump. It was a D instead of a B. I said, thank God that didn't happen. The most embarrassing typo that I can remember, though, like in an email or something, was early on when I started working in the first firm that I worked for, and I was sending an email to a reporter, female reporter, and in my signature, like in my sign off at the very end, say like best, right, or best regards or something like that, and I put an A in there, and I don't know why, so instead of being B-E-S-T, it said B-E-A-S-T, so I said beast. And then my name. I never did get a response. I don't know if that's the reason why. And I don't know how that happened. But obviously I had the word beast on my mind. And I called, I guess, maybe this woman thought I called her a beast. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm sure she was a lovely lady. But Yeah, that was pretty embarrassing. Oz and Glorious, what's going on, Oz? Thank you for the $5. Solid Monster. Tell us about your new setup. The EQ sounds like you're in the NPR studio. Sounds great, dude. Excellent stream as always. Does it sound good? I hope it sounds good. I didn't ask you guys, but well, as you can see, I mean, it's closer now to my face, and that was part of the problem before, just the way I had it all set up. The microphone, like, legitimately, the microphone was about 15 or 16 inches away from my mouth. And you're not really supposed to have your microphone 16 inches away from your face. So, but I always liked that look where, you know, it was kind of out of sight. You didn't see it. It was out of the way. So I hope it sounds good. I was coming in a little bit hot. On Monday, I went back and listened to it. Some people mentioned that it was a little loud, so I did lower the volume a little bit. You guys let me know if I need to lower it more, but hopefully we're coming in well and sounding good. So, Oz, thank you very much. Magician Sapphire says, with the $10, thank you, sir. Most likely, Bullet Club Gold will drop the Ring of Honor six-man championship after they win the Trios titles, and Ring of Honor will have a tournament to determine the new champions, which should be Lance Archer and The Righteous. I have a better idea. How about we just get rid of the titles? It's winner-take-all. So, winner-take-all to me means you get all the gold, and then instead of having them walk around with two sets of belts, just merge them and have one set of Trios belts, and that's it. That's all you need. I don't think you need to do anything else. Base Beerus, Joe not winning a world title in WWE is ridiculous. It is. Now, to be fair, he had some injury issues. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like he was healthy the entire time. But I agree. He should have at least, now he was the NXT champion, but he should have had at least one run as the WWE champion. Oz and Glorious, Tony Khan, if you are here. Fact that Shane Taylor Promotions, Daddy Magic, and Daniel Garcia are getting infinitely more TV time than Jay White is criminal. I like Daddy Magic. Very entertaining. He's kind of a throwback in that way. Be calm, see clearly. Is it me or does Jon Moxley make the show feel different? By the way, I'm still fighting this bout with depression. Hashtag be calm, see clearly. Well, as I told you the first time, we are all here for you. So if you ever want to talk, if you ever want to hang out, you know where to find us. You know we're always here. Moxley was, he was feeling it tonight. You know, Moxley was all fired up during that promo. You know what? He took a little time away. Right? When was the last time Moxley was on Dynamite? It's been at least a few weeks. That's what I mean with Jericho. Sometimes you take a little bit of time away, you come back refreshed. People actually miss you. They want to see you. There's something to be said for that. Hey, Carlos Galvan, a member, channel member for 29 months, almost 3 years. He's getting close. Getting close. Hey, you know what? Carlos, one day you may be a Blue Skull. You got a ways to go, though. Blue Skull's 48 months and above. We got our gold skulls. We got our red, our green, our blue. I love seeing them in the chat. Oz and Glorious wants you all to hit that like button. And he said it in all caps, so he means it. Larry Jester, why do you think the new generation intercontinental strap change colors? You mean from white to black? It's just a design preference on their part. I don't think it was any specific reason. Maybe consistency? Or maybe the fact that the women's titles are in white, and so they just wanted all the men's titles in black, or just a color other than white? Maybe that was the thought process behind it. The classic intercontinental design on a white strap to me is still gorgeous. But They love consistency in their branding. That's why now the new tag team titles that we have, and you'll see, it's going to happen again on Friday night. The new Raw tag team titles, right, are like little mini versions of the big gold World Heavyweight title. Because the World Heavyweight title looks a certain way, the Women's World title looks the same, and now the tag team titles look the same. And so you already know on SmackDown what the new tag belts are going to look like there. It's going to look like the Undisputed title, which looks like Bayley's title, and the tag titles are going to look the same. That's what they love. They love consistency across all of the branded belts. It's the way they do things. M. Mills, thank you for the $10. Good to see you again. Oz and Glorious, agreeing with Uffman regarding Julia Hart is a smoke show. She is a very, very pretty girl. Yes, she is. Base Beerus says Kill Bill 1 or 2. I'll go Kill Bill 1. But they're both very good. Chris Hogan, in honor of Killshot, who from Lucha Underground are you surprised did not make it to AEW or WWE? You know, when they brought in Angelico, I thought Angelico would go further than he did. So that was kind of surprising. I thought Mil Muertes would get a shot. But, you know, Phoenix got over and Penta. I'm not surprised that Penta and Phoenix got over. Ricochet, I knew he was going to land somewhere. But yeah, I really thought that he would do better than he did, and it just didn't happen. You know, King Cuerno, Santos Escobar, he's finally getting his shot in WWE. Brian Cage is in AEW. Tell you, man, Lucha Underground, they're going to do a documentary one day on Lucha Underground. And all of the people that it helped elevate to higher positions. Dixie Normus, why does Tony Khan let his greed speed for the weed? Indeed. I don't know. It's a good question. Darth Bolsey. Hey, Bolsey, thank you for the $10. John is champ and Seth and Roman aren't. Ah. The Juliet. Oklahoma Athletic Commission can go take a flying leap for their transphobia. Also, best Phil Collins song is In the Air Tonight. I love In the Air Tonight. In the Air Tonight is an epic song. I happen to really like Easy Lover. Barry MK400. What if Joe does get beat for the title and he does what he did in the 2K20 story and gets a golden arm to make himself stronger? Wait, what? I didn't play 2K20, so I must have missed that story. He got a golden arm? I need to know more about this story. Dylan Hensley with the 5. This Saturday on AAPW Heatwave, RD Beats against Kirby Knox for the Wrestling Championship. It's their mid-card belt. On Roku and Twitch. Sorry for the plug. No, well, plug away. Hey, Dylan is rising up the ranks here. So if you want to see Dylan, you could check out the show. AAPW Wrestling Championship on the line on Roku this Saturday. What time? You didn't say what time. Chris Faplander. There she is. Do you think Tony will continue to era the millennial? What? I don't know what you mean. Oz and Glorious, thank you again. Thank you, thank you. I'm glad you enjoy the audio. That makes me happy. Been trying to fine-tune it. Marios, I acknowledge you, my tribal solo. I like to be acknowledged. Thank you. Oz says, Starks saw that NXT contract and said, love you, TK. Hey, you know, there's a reason why I think that Camille got an NXT offer and said no. said no thank you. I can do better. Meanwhile, we still haven't seen her pop up anywhere. Where's she? Where's Camille? What happened to her? Bender McSimpson solo. The new mic sounds great. With all this talk about titles, I thought that said something else. I really like the Attitude Era Intercontinental Belt, a.k.a. the Egg Belt. Nah, I was not... I don't hate it. I don't despise it like some people do, but I was not a fan of the Egg Belt. I think part of the reason I wasn't a fan of the Egg Belt is because it replaced the better belt. There was no reason to get rid of the old belt in the first place. So I automatically disliked the Egg Belt when I first saw it. Prince Vegeta. Got a new handheld gaming emulator today. It plays N64, PS1, Game Boy Color, etc. It's pretty badass. Gaming Pokemon Crystal while watching. Well, that's cool. Which one is it? Because I have the Miu Mini. And I just beat Super Mario World, which I could not do without save states, which is a godsend on this thing. You could literally save, like, wherever you are in the game, you could save that state in that exact moment. So that way, when you inevitably get killed at the end of the level, you could at least back up to where you last saved it. Without that, there's no way I would have been able to beat it. There's no way. But I'm loving it. I'm loving the Miu, man. The Miu Mini Plus. I have one in white. You can get it off Amazon. It's like $70. Nier. There you go. You come for the king, you best not miss. Hey, Nier, I hope you're safe. I hope you're doing well. Much love to you, my friend. Daniel Malcolm, Phil Collins, classics for days. It's 80s, baby. You got classics all over the place. Barry MK400, 2K20 had a very silly story. I loved it. Luis. What is your favorite Miley Cyrus song? Only a question that Luis would send in. See you again. Darth Bulzy, by the way, WrestleMania 40 sucked. My opinion. Well, there you go. I think you're in the minority on that, but he thought WrestleMania 40 sucked. Yes, but which match did you like the most, though? I still want to know which match you thought was the best, even though you thought the show sucked. Barry says, you get the best of both worlds. Love that song. And Boney says, you or Hog ever been on Botchamania? I don't know about Hog, but I have been on Botchamania before. Not for anything that I botched, which I've certainly botched plenty of things, but Matthew had me do a read for a segment on Botchamania, and I don't remember offhand. I have it saved somewhere. It's like episode 4, I don't remember, 416 maybe, I don't remember. It was one of the 400s, which was very cool. So I think I did the narration for a WCW segment, if I remember, that involved Kevin Nash and DDP. And that's all I remember. But yes, I did that many years ago. I did an interview with Matthew himself on the channel. It's one of the early interviews that I did. You go back on the YouTube channel, type in Solomonster and Matthew, M-A-F-F-E-W. It'll come right up. My interview with Mr. Botchamania himself. Matthew is good people. Good dude. And Retro KOH, play Kaizo Mario World. It's a lot easier than World. What is a Kaizo Mario World? You know, I didn't realize that there was, I guess it's considered Super Mario World 2. Yoshi's Island. I started playing it. I don't really like it. Eh. It's not the same. Red Emissary of Darkness says, farted. Thank you for sharing. Oz and Glorious, better character, Richie April or Ralph Cifaretto? I'll go Ralph. Ralph. Although Richie was just a fucking evil SOB. And when he got blown away, I was very happy to see that. But Ralph was the more entertaining character. And Darth Bulzy. If I had to pick it all, LA Knight against AJ Styles. That match felt the most organic. Other matches were either tag matches, rematches, or both, with the exception of a few. Base Beer says, chicken butt. Very good. I had chicken for dinner tonight. Not the butt, but I had chicken. I had chicken lettuce wraps. That's what I had for dinner. Solemn Oscar coming into 2003 emulation. No, it's hey, look, the device, it's about the handheld device. I know there have been emulators on here for ages, but it's the portable retro handheld that I'm new to. This is like a whole new world for me. Devin from NJ, instead of talking about my acquaintances, I will now ask you Vince-related questions from now on. What do I think he had for breakfast? Again, I don't really spend too much time thinking about Vince McMahon, except the article today that I read that NBC News did on him, and I'll talk about that on Sunday. Apparently he's traveling all over the world and coming back with kittens and puppies. Did he make them sign NDAs too? Anyway, the goal tonight, I didn't think we were going to hit it, but you guys pulled a rabbit out of the hat. You pulled the white rabbit out of the hat. Shout out to BlissFan. And it is now time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Didn't think it was going to happen, but you guys didn't let me down. Are there still people out there that have not seen The Sopranos? What the hell are you waiting for? You need to fix that very quickly. I'm telling you, you won't regret it. Poor Jenny Sack. What'd she ever do? All right, tag team, be the booker. Let's kick things off here with American Alpha. Here's a team that could have gone far. And it's a shame they broke them up, even before the main roster. They never really had a run on the main roster. But we have Jason Jordan and Chad Gable. What a run they had, though, in NXT, man. What the matches with the Revival, it's fucking awesome shit, man. American Alpha, former NXT Tag Team Champions. Let's see who they are going to be opposing. It will be American Alpha and the Bushwhackers. I thought for sure it was going to be a guaranteed bell. Then we land on the Bushwhackers. And it all goes to hell. See, I just rhymed. And I didn't even mean to. All right, women's be the booker. We begin with Dana Brooke again with Dana Brooke. Ash by Elegance is her name in TNA. We just picked Dana Brooke. Was it Monday? It was Monday or Friday. And we're back on Dana Brooke again. And there's Perk Angle. He likes what he sees. Dana Brooke going to be stepping into the ring with the Professor. Now, see, I'm torn now. Oh, man. I'm torn on this one. I can't do it. She's great, but I can't do it. That's not a match I would book. I love Serena Deeb, but not even she can make me go bell on that match. Oh, we are headed down the tubes here with this installment. This is not good. This is not going good. It's main event time. Here we go. You guys love this stuff, man. You guys live for this. You can't get this kind of entertainment anywhere else. Look at that. How about Papa Shango in your main event? Don't you want Papa Shango? Put a voodoo curse on you? Papa Shango and main event are not words that should be going together. We must finish this off. Papa Shango against Ric Flair. We did the exact opposite of what we wanted to do tonight. I wanted a clean sweep. We got a clean sweep, but it was in the wrong direction. I should take that soundbite, that clean sweep soundbite that we have, and I should probably like run it through. I should run it through my audio program, but reverse the audio and see what it sounds like in reverse. And that could be the sound effect that we use when we have three straight buzzers. I wonder what that would sound like. Well, that was a fail. Entertaining, but that was a fail. Well, they can't all be winners. I don't know what to tell you. Let's get back to your messages. Mario says, did you ban Rumplefeet? No, he's still here. He's a little busy right now. He's getting stepped on somewhere. Todd Warner, him and Tony Atlas. Did you watch the Curb series finale? I did. I watched this entire final season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I enjoyed it. I thought the finale was very good. I do like how they, he and Jerry Seinfeld can poke fun at themselves for that Seinfeld finale as they did in the Curb finale, and I will say no more. But I enjoyed it. Can't believe, that show, I think the pilot aired in 1999 and the series itself started in 2000. Now, in between some of the seasons, you had years go by, so it's not like it ran 24 years straight, but it's a hell of a run. Hey, Robert, have a good night, man. Oz and Gloria says, Ralph was awful, but he gave us Valentina. That he did. And he also says, to me, Ginny Sack is beautiful. She is Ruben-esque. Wait, Ginny didn't do anything wrong. I will say this. Johnny's love for Ginny, again, as awful as these people are, and as terrible as the things were that he did because of his line of work, I always thought it was very admirable, the love that he had for his wife. Like, it was just one of those weird things on the show where you actually see something noble in a character. And that's about the only good thing I could say about any of these people. Except, well, yeah, I don't want to give stuff away, but there is one character who I feel very badly for. And Warm Corn, Chef Jey Uso. It's just meat, Oos. Day one dish. Warm Corn loves his puns. He loves his food puns there. I will be live with you again on Friday night. That is for SmackDown. And then, of course, Sunday, I mentioned it earlier, but it's worth mentioning again just to remind you all that on Sunday night, I will be live on YouTube after AEW Dynasty for the full recap. And that, of course, does not include episode 858. Of the Solo Monster Sounds Off, which is also dropping on Sunday. So you're going to get two podcasts this weekend. I hope you enjoy it. So be well. Stay safe. Thank you for hanging out with me and all the love tonight. And I will see you back here again for the SmackDown recap. I'll see you Friday night. Take care, guys.